This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The votes have been counted in Michigan's November election, and in the case of at least the state Senate race in Kalamazoo County, counted again. The Michigan Campaign Finance Network has been trying to figure out where the money came from before those votes were cast. Rich Robinson is director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
On your website, you start off the analysis of where the money came from in various races by saying that Michigan is the dark money capital of American politics. What makes it so?
Well, the high percentage of the money raised and spent, particularly in the executive campaigns, the Supreme Court campaign, much more so than the legislative races. It's in the statewide races. But nearly half of all money spent in the Supreme Court campaign was off the books, and that's been the case this entire century. A significant amount of the spending in the attorney general race, most of the ads that were seen about Bill Schuette this fall were paid for by a 527 committee called Michigan Advocacy Trust that doesn't report its receipts and expenditures. And then in the gubernatorial race, about two-thirds of the money that was in that campaign was independent groups. Not all of that what you'd call completely dark money, but nearly all of it entities that didn't report their activity at all to the state of Michigan. So the state of Michigan has a particularly lame posture where it comes to requiring accountability for political campaign spending.
Specifically on the governor's race, you describe a $40 million accountability gap. Explain what that means.
Well, that is the point I was making, that all this television advertising, and by far most of the television advertising, was paid for by the Republican Governors Association and the Democratic Governors Association, was not reported at all to the state of Michigan. The state of Michigan says if you don't explicitly say vote for or against a candidate, you haven't made a campaign expenditure. Now, I don't know why we would think these partisan governors' associations or political parties would be spending money on television other than to influence the votes of citizens, but that's the position the state of Michigan has taken. And so all of this advertising is absent from the official record that the state of Michigan has online. And I was able to compile most of this record by going through the public files of the state broadcasters and cable systems. So it's a huge part. I mean, two-thirds of this campaign that isn't part of the public record in the state of Michigan. And I think that is a huge accountability gap.
Looking at the legislative races, the 20th District State Senate race here in Kalamazoo County was the most expensive. By how wide a margin was it the most expensive in Michigan?
Well, by nearly $1 million. It was just far and away the most expensive race, state Senate race, anywhere in Michigan this election cycle. Just by a wide margin, more expensive. And the interesting thing about it is that most of that money is coming from the legislative caucus PACs and the political parties, either in-kind contributions, which means the caucus PAC buys the advertising, or independent expenditures that really aren't independent in any meaningful way, because Michigan law allows a state or an independent spender to coordinate with a campaign committee. It just can't be under the control of the candidate. So much like the federal campaigns, these things are being centralized in the way the money is raised and spent. And local fundraising by the candidate committees is a diminishing factor in the whole thing. So I don't know what that means for the connectedness between constituents and the public officials who represent them. It seems to me it's a bit of a break in that connection.
And the parties are pretty attuned to which districts are the most competitive. And so does that lead to the district which here is in Kalamazoo County, the 20th State Senate District, getting so much more money because they realize that there's a chance that either candidate could win? As a matter of fact, we ended up with a 61-vote margin at the end of the day. So is that why that money's coming from the parties? They know pretty well which districts are going to be more competitive than others.
Absolutely, that's right, Gordon. And the way they calculate that is they look at what they consider to be the party base votes, and they don't make that calculation based on the top of the ticket because there are ticket splitters at the top of the ticket. But they look at the statewide education boards, the governing bodies for the University of Michigan, Michigan State, and Wayne State, and the State Board of Education, because the assumption there is the citizens don't know who these candidates are, and it's those seats where they plunk their underlying party preference. And so the parties look at that. They have that broken down to the voting precinct and their expectation of what a base vote is, and they know exactly where the competition will be. And conversely, they know exactly where the competition will not be. And that was one of the striking things to me about going through these end-of-cycle data. Really, what we have is in a third of the legislative districts, both state House and state Senate, one major party candidate or the other major party's candidate doesn't even bother to raise money. It's a foregone conclusion that they can't compete. And that's partly a function of the big sort, you know, how people choose to live in different places, but it's partly a function of gerrymandering, too.
The 61st State House District, which includes the city of Portage, saw the Republican Brand Iden defeat Democrat John Fisher, even though Fisher actually ended up raising and spending more money. But how rare is it that the winning candidate is outspent?
It is extremely rare. There were only three in this election cycle in the state House who managed to defeat a candidate with greater financial backing. There were none in the state Senate. So two things that are generally strong predictors of success are incumbency and the advantage in financing. And of course, the 61st was an open seat, so you didn't have that in play. One of the things that I'd note about that was an awful lot of the spending for Fisher came through in-kind contributions from the caucus PAC. It was not locally raised money to a very great extent. And so it wasn't reflective, I don't think, of the underlying closeness of support by constituents that translated into financial support for the candidate. So in a sense, it was an outsider's bet. And it turned out not to come through.
The candidate committees for state Supreme Court, as you noted earlier, they accounted for less than half of all the spending in that race. And as you say, that's a pattern in Michigan. What do other states do when it comes to judicial elections, their state Supreme Courts, that makes it less dark or makes the election and the fundraising of it more transparent?
I think it's a convergence of a number of issues. One, we have an absolutely unique way of selecting candidates that is for what is ostensibly a nonpartisan position, and that is that they're nominees of the political parties. I think that tends to politicize it, and the great part of the outside spending and unreported spending this year was the Michigan Republican Party buying over $4 million worth of television ads supporting its slate of candidates, the incumbents, Brian Zarin, David Viviano, and Judge James Redford, from Grand Rapids. That's one of the factors, I think, is that it really is quite a partisan race. Another part of it, I think, is just the total failure to require accountability and transparency for where money is coming from in these political campaigns. Again, this is the technical factor. If you haven't said explicitly vote for or against this candidate, you haven't made a campaign ad. Well, You know, when the Republican Party buys $4 million worth of television ads in the month before the election to create these hagiographic messages about their candidates and how they're good for your life, I think we're kind of deliberately blinded here as to what's going on. And I think that if there is no accountability, you tend to draw out some spending that wouldn't be there if an anonymity wasn't afforded to them. It's hard to say how this has been perpetuated over time, Gordon. I mean, we've seen this in some other states, and that pattern has kind of played itself out. But that may be because one party has entirely captured the court. And generally, you don't see this kind of spending unless the majority might be at stake. It really wasn't this time around, but still the spending was there.
Do you see anything on the horizon, given the current makeup of the legislature, the governor's office, who the current Secretary of State is, Ruth Johnson, that makes you think that there is going to be any movement on campaign finance reform in the new session of the legislature, which begins in January?
I'm not optimistic at all, Gordon, and I'll tell you the reason is that we're in the position we're in not because good people have failed to do the right thing, but it's because there was an overtly hostile legislative action last December to prevent disclosure. And this was the case where Secretary of State Ruth Johnson had said she was going to revisit how we had interpreted the requirements for disclosure. And the legislature, or the Republicans in the legislature, immediately reacted to foreclose the idea that there it could be possible to require disclosure of any ad that didn't say explicitly vote for or against. So given that that's been the posture of the Republicans and given their majorities in the legislature, I'm not looking forward to any positive action. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to see myself proven wrong on this, but I'm not optimistic at all.
Rich Robinson, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Rich Robinson is director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. Links with more information and longer versions of interviews on West Southwest can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.